We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Monday, August 26th, and a lot going on in the news. First, Congressmen Biggs, Crane, Gates, Mills, and Roy, some of our very favorites who are fighters on Capitol Hill, are going to hold a forum this afternoon at the Heritage Foundation examining the attempted assassination of President Trump. Some of those witnesses will be our good friend Dan Bongino, who's, of course, a former Secret Service agent, Eric Prince, former United States Navy SEAL officer, and Ben Schaefer, a Washington regional SWAT operator. So joining me now is Representative Andy Biggs from the great state of Arizona to talk more about what we can anticipate from this forum. So good morning, sir, and thanks so much for joining.
Good morning, Jenna. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first, will this be live streamed? This is going to be, let's see, what was the time here? From noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, will this be live streamed so people can watch from the Heritage Foundation?
Yes, it will be live streamed, and you're going to ask me for the link, and I don't know the link, but it is definitely going to be live streamed. You get the that's far above me, whatever the link is, but yeah,
that is okay. I'm sure that people can just log into X and go to the Heritage Foundation's X page, and their social media team there is great. So I'm sure that they will have that well in hand. So yes, that is nothing that you need to worry about, but. But in terms of what you are worrying about, which is preparation for this forum, what do you anticipate behind this and what these witnesses are going to tell us?
Well, first of all, we hope that we can amalgamate all the information that's come out so far. So we hope that everybody can see it together. You're going to see a timeline of the events leading up to the day of July 13th. You're going to see the timeline of July 13th. We're going to talk about procedures, technical aspects. We're going to talk about everything from we have the Ben Schaefer, who was on the ground in Butler that day. He's going to talk about everything from communications and the communications issues, specific problems that took place, what should have happened, and where the investigation from the task force should be going. And so there's a lot of information that's going to come out today. But particularly, I think people will be very intrigued about the communications. I think we're going to rehash and bring up and try to coalesce some of the information that we have with regard to the shooter and the day of, and why, how did this happen? I mean, we want to get to the start of that because the American people have kind of been left out in the dust for the last 3 or 4 weeks. This big media hit, media hype at the beginning, but now it's forgotten. We don't want it to be forgotten. We want to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right that the American people deserve to know what happened, the events that led up to this, the obvious failures the day of. There has been some speculation now and rumors based on various reports and information that has come out in the media that the shooter probably did not act alone. Is that something that you're going to be discussing today as well in terms of just a possible coordination from the shooter with anyone else?
Yeah, we will address that with what information we have. There's not a ton of information on that because, you remember, the official story at the beginning was that he was a lone wolf, right? But there's now indications that and evidence that maybe that's not accurate. So we'll try to get to that as well. I'll tip my hat to Clay Higgins, who is on the official task force. He released his own independent investigative report, and he makes suggestions to that too. And then there's been some other good reporting by Susan Crabtree and others indicating that he was not a lone wolf like we were originally told.
And I'm speaking with Congressman Andy Biggs from the great state of Arizona about this forum. And again, it'll be from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern time today at the Heritage Foundation. So I'm sure you can stream that on their X page, or if you go anywhere to streaming links, Rumble and YouTube, and just type this in terms of the forum from the Heritage Foundation examining the attempted assassination of President Trump. You can watch that. And there are so many questions, and it was remarkable to me in the testimony of now the former head of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, in front of Congress, that the shooter acting alone was basically the only thing that she was confident about. I mean, she didn't even know some of the basics. I'm not even sure she knew what day it was, but she knew that. And that was very suspicious to me, just as a layperson watching this, but, you know, having obviously spent a lot of time in trial courts and with testimony and all of that, it just seemed very odd that that was the only thing that she was confident about, and really didn't have any other information and wasn't that forthcoming. But when you mention as well, Congressman, that, you know, this has kind of been memory holed by the media, that's obvious that it's because this is an election year and they don't want to have any sort of favorables to Donald Trump or any type of sympathy. But this is a big deal. I mean, whether or not this is the Republican or the Democrat candidate for office, whether this was the current sitting president, I mean, ultimately, this should matter to the media because it matters to the American people and our own safety and being able to trust some of these institutions like the Secret Service.
And Jen, I'll say you're very astute by your recapping of Cheadle's, former Director Cheadle's testimony, because it did stick out like a sore thumb that the only thing that, as you say, that she was really going to answer a question on is when she said he was a lone wolf, basically, because everything else, she was deferring to the FBI and didn't know what was going on. And that was actually even contradictory to what her first statement was to media, was that that they didn't put Secret Service on the roof of that particular location that the shooter was on because it was sloped. And that was just bogus because the roof that they were on had a higher degree of slope than that particular building. So, yeah, that's a huge problem in and of itself. But one thing that you touched on there is, and this is really part and parcel to the entire problem of the federal government these days, and many local and state governments too, is that the American people feel like you can't trust them. These are your institutions that for years that you trusted, and then you start finding out the FBI has been surveilling Americans in the millions illegally without warrants, contrary to the FISA laws and contrary to the Constitution. And then you see this Secret Service failure, which was huge, which they have acknowledged as a failure, but then they don't want to be forthcoming with what was going on. And it's not, and quite frankly, the American people aren't sure. Do you trust the FBI to investigate this? Do you trust Secret Service? Do you even trust congressional committees? They are searching for truth, and they are searching for the institutions that were the foundations or the regimes and institutions of this country that supported the Constitution. And now you find out that maybe you can't trust them. And we're trying to, through our effort to make this transparent, to rebuild a little bit of that so people can say, well, okay, at least somebody's out there, they're doing something, and this is where the information they can come to for this information. We've had whistleblowers come. We think more whistleblowers will come when they see what we do today.
So is that really your main goal with this forum today, is transparency and to just ensure that there is media attention, or do you intend to take some of what these witnesses are saying and bring that back ultimately to the task force in Congress for even more accountability?
Well, goal number one is to have transparency and an aggregation of the information. because we're trying to help rebuild trust in institutions. And number two is as we develop what you hear today, we hope that there might be something there that the task force can use and that the investigators can use. And frankly, you want to see consistency. So if what our witnesses say today is inconsistent with what is produced elsewhere, you're going to want to say, well, why is there inconsistencies? Let's get to the bottom of it. So it will be kind of a marker for hopefully more complete, thorough, transparent information and get to the bottom of this whole thing.
Well, we really appreciate that and the fact that you're taking the time to organize this and bring attention to it. And again, Representative Andy Biggs, who's my special guest this morning, is coordinating this along with Representatives Eli Crane, Matt Gaetz, Corey Mills, and Chip Roy. And this is so important. And in just the last few minutes that I have with you, Congressman Biggs, I want to also ask you, speaking of distrust of institutions and transparency to the American people, Congress, shortly after you all went on the break, released the report that found that President Joe Biden had, shocker, had actually committed offenses that are impeachable offenses against the United States Constitution. And a lot of conservatives, I think, felt a little bit frustrated about the timing of that and the fact that he's no longer running for president. So it seems like there won't be any accountability for him, at least from Congress. What did you make of that report and that timing? Just in general, but then also specifically with respect to Americans being able to trust the institutions of government, like Congress, that is supposed to hold the executive branch accountable.
Well, first of all, we all know, and the report was pretty thorough on the crimes committed by the Biden family and Joe Biden, how he was enriched by selling access to his term of his political career, right? So that's important. We can't ever forget that. Number two, the timing of it frustrated me as well, because this should have been released. I would have hoped it would have been released many months ago, but I'm not in charge of that. So the timing was a bummer. But I have actually talked to the speaker, and I've said, how do we tell the American people that we're going to hold the executive accountable? Whether Joe Biden's the president, a candidate for president, or returning to civilian life, I mean, the bottom line is he violated laws. His family violated laws, and this attorney general isn't going to hold him accountable. So when are we going to actually do an impeachment? And I'm told that there is a substantial likelihood, which is, we'll all believe that with $10, you can go get something at the store, maybe something cheap. But anyway, the bottom line is, I'm told that after the election of November 5th, that's when you'll start seeing the action on Joe Biden. A little late, but better late than never. But there has to be accountability at our level. There has to be accountability for the AG, who won't prosecute these cases, who won't even investigate these cases. And quite frankly, the American people, if they understood how bad Joe Biden was, and then how complicit the Democrat administrations have been in protecting and covering up his duplicity and the corruption, I think the American people would reject that. I would hope that they would reject that.
Yeah, and that's really fascinating, Congressman Biggs, that this may come after November, because obviously Joe Biden still has through the rest of November until January 20th to be in office. So that's about a little over 2.5 months there in office. And so impeachment proceedings still could happen. But has the speaker said anything? I mean, is it just because of the optics and the potential impact on the November 5th election that they're waiting?
That's what I was told, is that at this point, Kamala is so dangerous, so bad. Her policies would be terrible for the country, and she's got her own baggage as well that she's got to carry along. That if we don't want to distract from President Trump's reelection, that's really the bottom line. That's what I've been told.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that update, Congressman Andy Biggs, and we'll look forward to watching that forum today. Again, it's at the Heritage Foundation from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. The forum examining the attempted assassination of President Donald Trump. It will be streamed. We are told so. Go to Heritage Foundation on their X page. Look for that link. If I get that earlier than noon, then I will post that on my X page as well. But thanks so much, Congressman Biggs. We are always praying for you. We really appreciate everything you do to fight for us in Congress. We'll be right back. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And the big political news, of course, this morning is that Robert Kennedy Jr. has endorsed Donald Trump. And he spoke at Donald Trump's rally in Arizona Friday night, where he explained this, according to Daily Wire, why he decided to endorse the former president. Kennedy's remarks came after he announced earlier in the day that he was suspending his campaign and being removed from the ballot in swing states because he did not want to help Democrat presidential nominee Kamala Harris by staying in the race. So this has been met with a lot of opposition and consternation, of course, from the Democrats who are now trying to distance themselves from Kennedy. His own family has claimed that he betrayed them, which is just ridiculous. It's like, can't we all have political opinions and not, make each other out to be, terrible people for this? He's totally entitled to his opinion. But let's see what Ryan Fournier has to say in his opinion. He joins me now. He is the co-founder of Students for Trump. They did a lot of great work in past presidential races for Trump, and I know are doing a lot of great work heading in to November. So, Ryan, good morning. And I think this is actually a really big endorsement for Trump and is going to tip the scales a little bit, at least hopefully in some of the upcoming polls.
Yeah, good morning, Jenna. Good to hear from you and all the listeners out there. Very noble thing what RFK Jr. did. I always say this. It's one thing to disagree with someone's political views. It's another thing to go out, especially family, and attack them publicly and just put out all these nasty comments and do all these interviews. So to see that, I really do feel bad for the guy. And, you would think the Kennedy family would act a little differently, especially in the public eye when it comes to disagreements like this. But I guess not. But what he did was a very noble thing. And I think that for him to do such a thing, it's really starting to prove and show, I think, that the Democrat Party is not what it used to be. You look at Trump, he used to be a Democrat. Elon used to be a Democrat. Tulsi Gabbard used to be a Democrat. Now RFK Jr. used to be a Democrat. And, all of these people, for the most part, and other former Democrats I know, left that party for a reason. It's not the same party it was 30, 40 years ago. And what they're doing, they tried to keep RFK Jr. off the ballot. They worked overtime to do that. They're doing the same thing to Cornel West in Pennsylvania. It's only a matter of time that more and more people wake up to sort of the system that they're creating, almost like a Tammany Hall system that we used to see during around the Civil War period in New York City with the political bosses, and wake up from that and realize that, okay, maybe we do need to fight back against that, or against this whole system much harder than we have before, and that it's going to take, one of us, right, our vote matters, and have that mentality across the board to really make some change. So I'm really hopeful about this endorsement, and I think it's going to do a lot of good.
Yeah, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. posted on X just yesterday saying what MAGA really means, and he puts that, of course, in quotation. The phrase has troubled liberals who think it is a call for a return to America before civil rights, gay rights, and women's rights. But I have a more generous interpretation, one that is truer to my experience of Donald Trump as he is today. Make America Great Again recalls a nation brimming with vitality, with a can-do spirit, with hope and a belief in itself. This was an America that was beginning to confront its darker shadows, could acknowledge the injustice in its past and present, yet at the same time could celebrate its successes. It was a nation of broad prosperity, the world's most vibrant middle class, and an idealistic belief, though not consistently applied, in freedom, justice, and democracy. It was a nation that led the world in innovation, productivity, and technology, and it was the healthiest country in the world. I've talked to many Trump supporters. I've talked with his inner circle. I've talked to the man himself. This is the America they want to restore. I think that's very well put, Ryan. How do you see this type of message from RFK Jr. resonating with maybe some of those disaffected Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, when he was doing the polling, I watched a really good interview with him, and he was pretty upfront. He didn't want to give the election to Kamala Harris. He was referencing some internal polls that said that, you know, if he were to get out the race today, it was a steady 57% number of people who supported RFK who would go and vote for Trump. And, you know, when you look at some of these numbers, and especially the swing states, I mean, he's polling double digits. So even 57%, anywhere around that number, is going to significantly help Trump. We've already seen some early polling where you look at states like Michigan or Nevada where, you know, you might have had Trump 5-6 points behind Harris, according to the polls. Now those polls are sort of revamped in a way where he's like 1 or 2 points on average. So there's definitely an effect. I think we're going to see more of those numbers come out mid to end of week. But it's going to be really beneficial. And he makes a really good point. That's the narrative game that the Democrats have been playing for years, is if they can make this narrative out to be that we want to return this nation to the days of, you know, the KKK, right? Or, you know, before with segregation. If they can get that narrative out there, just like with the gun issue, so many other things, it's basically fear, right? They're ginning up fear amongst a population of people who are already pretty misinformed on what's going on in the world. And so they use that fear factor to get those votes. And that's why it's so vital, so important to get the messaging out there in front of that to say, no, we're not doing this. And the Trump campaign's been doing a very good job with the war room. We've seen it on X. We've seen it on the messaging where anytime they come out and make a false statement, they're hitting right back. So, I mean, that's a good thing. But I think that, you know, going into this week, we're going to know more. I do not think Kamala is going to get the boost that you traditionally see following a convention. I think it's probably going to be the opposite, because how many days are we in now? Like near 40 days, still has no policy put out there. They're running off of the message of hope and joy, which joy does not win elections. So I think that this is a really good thing for Donald Trump, and I think it's all going to come down to, and one other thing too, more Democrats are coming out. According to RFK and the campaign, they've got a bunch more endorsements from former Democrats, political leaders, thought leaders, who are going to be coming out and endorsing and supporting Trump. So I think that this one instance of RFK, you know, leaving the Democrat side, you know, dropping out of the race and endorsing Trump, I think that that's going to create a wave of more people, you know, to be open to the idea of doing such a thing themselves.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Ryan Fournier, who is the co-founder of Students for Trump. And we have seen that RFK and the Trump campaign are saying that more Democrats in the coming days are going to endorse him. Do we have any idea who some of those might be?
I'm not sure as of yet. I haven't gotten headwind of it. I know that I think that they're expecting one to do by Friday. And then in the next month, probably 2 to 3 more pretty decently known Democrats within the party, the movement. So we'll have to see. You know, I'm very optimistic about it, though. There's always, you know, you got the October surprise. We're not to October yet. But there's already been quite a whirlwind going on, even in the month of August, now going into September here shortly. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, and interestingly, Democrat Representative Dean Phillips, who's from Minnesota, so, you know, really interesting in terms of where Governor Tim Walz is at on the other side of the ticket, but he was the sole Democrat who ran against Biden during the 2024 Democrat primary. He didn't obviously have an opportunity to run against Kamala Harris because she didn't actually get any votes, but he said that he would accept an invitation to serve in either a Democrat or Republican administration, telling Fox News Digital that he aspires to, quote, help this country in some way, shape, or form. So to me, it'll be interesting to see if some of those more perhaps open-minded Democrats would actually, now that it's a Kamala Harris ticket, not Joe Biden, and seeing the contrast in worldviews that we've continued to talk about on this program versus, you know, communism and really protecting freedom and liberty and the Western tradition that's built on the Judeo-Christian worldview, whether that will be an impetus for some of these people, like even someone like a Representative Dean Phillips, to actively and openly endorse Donald Trump. But you know, but there was another question, Ryan, as of last night with a post that Trump made on Truth Social. And it's interesting because he's posting on Truth Social. He is back on X as well. But it seems like more of the sort of curated statements that maybe are a little more vetted are going out on his X, where he seems to be doing kind of his typical just stream of consciousness more still on Truth Social. So those are still getting posted. And there was one from last night that said this: I watched ABC Fake News this morning, both lightweight reporter Jonathan Carl's ridiculous and biased interview of Tom Cotton, who was fantastic, and their so-called panel of Trump haters. And I ask, why would I do the debate against Kamala Harris on that network? And he goes on to, you know, kind of ramble a little bit. And so the speculation now is that he might drop from the ABC debate. Do you think that's accurate? I think that would be a mistake. I think we need a debate, especially because, as you mentioned, it's almost 40 days that Kamala has avoided any sort of a media interview or accountability.
No, I don't think he's going to drop from the debate. I mean, Trump's very good at sort of debate tactic, you know, let them grab the bait, let them take the bait. You know, I've seen this before. I really don't think he's going to drop out of this. I mean, he's going to be doing these town halls as well. And I wish Kamala would have agreed to the initial schedule that was agreed with Biden. I wish we would have had a sooner debate than what we're getting. But, you know, it is what it is. But what this comes down to, really, and for the, you know, the folks listening to this, it's either Donald Trump or it's, you know, really the end of America. You know, you can't sustain another 4 years of this leadership, or lack thereof, for better terms. You know, I think a lot of people, especially when you were just talking about Dean Phillips, to me, this isn't even a Republican ticket anymore. You know, we're looking at this as the American ticket, right? The unity ticket to come together and stop the evil forces that will be from an administration like what Kamala Harris would bring to the country. And, you know, everything that, you know, we do in these next 70 days is going to be vital. If you're not registered to vote, we need to get you registered to vote. If you want to go door knock, we need to get you door knocking. Same thing with phone banking. Getting out the vote is going to be critical. And, I mean, we have some really, really big forces behind all this stuff. Now in Pennsylvania, I mean, Scott Pressler. I mean, you know some of the work Scott does phenomenal work. He's got numbers out there that I haven't seen from either 2016 or 2020 on the ground in Pennsylvania, going out, getting those low propensity voters, getting them signed up, registered to vote. So, I mean, I think everything is in our favor if we push it and we keep going in the direction we're going. I think we're heading in a good direction. But I think the whole thing with Trump is let Trump be Trump. That was the winning strategy in 2016. He was great at it with social media, and he knows how to, you know, sort of press the right buttons to rile people up and to start to question things and push a narrative that is totally counter to what is true. And we'll just have to wait and see. But no, to answer that question again, no, he's not going to drop out of that debate.
Yeah, I hope that he doesn't, because I think that the American people deserve to hear from a Trump versus Kamala. From, you know, we obviously had that terrible debate between Trump and Biden, but that's not the election anymore. And so the American people deserve to hear from both candidates and really understand what is at stake in this election, what the worldview and policy differences are between the candidates. And as you said, Ryan, it's so important that people do get out and vote their values. And I've never been a fan of just sitting out an election. You know, there's never going to be a perfect candidate. We can can especially vote our values all the way down ticket. There are so many different amendments that and propositions that are on state ballots that are also important, not to mention the composition of Congress, the Senate, and then state and local elections as well. And I had posted just a question, you know, and sometimes, you know, a lot of people on X will sometimes presume my position just based on, you know, me asking like, hey, what do you think of this argument? But, you know, this is something that I'd like you to respond to, Ryan, you know, as someone who has supported Trump in the past, supports him currently, there are a lot of Republicans and conservatives that don't see this as a coalition of, you know, liberals and conservatives against communism, which is how Joel Pollack at Breitbart framed it. And I think he framed that well, that, you know, people even like RFK, who are Democrats, are still at least for America as it was founded and for Western civilization. They're not communists. But so this argument is saying, you know, I'm sitting it out because Trump is no better. I'd rather have Republicans fighting Kamala Harris than enabling Trump. That was posted by a user named Brian Jacobson. And I got a lot of responses to this on social media, you know, and some really, I think, well thought out arguments against that. But I'm just interested in your take on that.
Well, I mean, it's all based on policies. And we've heard some of what Kamala wants. They've, you know, hinted at these ideas of giving, you know, the $25,000 towards mortgage payments, you know, more government intervention. They're talking about the corporate tax hike and how that's going to have a massive effect on everybody's lives, you know, especially if you're out there and you're a moneymaker, you're bringing the bread to the table. I mean, these policies just really are aligned with communism. I mean, there's even some AI tools out there that when you go in there and you ask, you know, list out these policies and what, you know, sort of political thought does this more so align with? And most of them, if they're not censored, will come out and say that these are more aligned with Marxist communistic principles. And that's just not going to be the solution. That's not going to help people in the long run. It's going to raise up our deficit even more than it already is. And it's going to usher in more government reliability. You're going to have to rely on the government. And that's exactly counter to what conservatives believe in. And so when you look at that long term, 4 years of that would be very destructive. And if you look at the power of the incumbency and she gets reelected 4 years, you know, from now, you get full 8 years of that. And I mean, that's why they put these ideas out there. I remember price control was the first one, and people, she's slowly but surely losing support because of these ideals. Not even Biden was talking about this stuff. But it's even more radical than some of what, you know, his policies were. And I think that a lot of people long term, it's like, okay, and I've seen the posts on this as well, where it's like, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet. I don't like Trump for some of the things he says, but I think it's going to be a lot better than dealing with this for 4 years.
Yeah, really well said. And, you know, I think that the fallacy in that argument, you know, just me personally, is saying Trump is no better. Well, there are differences and there are distinctions. And I think in a debate, if Trump can bring out the contrast in the policy differences, I mean, there are things, you know, like if abortion is your only issue, well, Trump isn't doing so well on that. But that's not the only issue. There are still a lot of contrast between the policies. And so to say that he is no better would say that he's actually for communism and some of these other policies that Kamala Harris clearly is, and I just don't think that that's true. But anyway, Ryan Fournier, really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
We don't have to be like the 10 that said it can't be done, it's too big, the Giants are too big. We need to be like Joshua and Caleb and say, you know what, there are Giants. This is a massive problem. When you have a nation that is ignorant of the principles that produce a free society, start where you can. It's the only way I know. It's a little bit at a time.
Join Walker Wildman and Rick Green as they tackle today's issues from a biblical and a constitutional perspective. At the Core, 1 p.m. Central weekdays on AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we're still talking about Robert Kennedy Jr. and his endorsement of Donald Trump. I personally think that that actually is a big deal. If you Google just Kennedy endorsement of Trump and poll on Google, the top stories that will come up, these are some of the headlines. How polls say RFK Jr. supporters will vote now that he's dropped out of the race. RFK voters on, quote, frustrating suspension of campaign. He's playing politics as if he's not a politician, like they all play politics. ABC is, how much momentum will RFK Jr.'s endorsement give Trump? RFK Jr. just endorsed Trump. Will it even matter in November? And then the New York Times, Kennedy's decision is unlikely to change the race significantly. Now, imagine if these headlines were talking about Kennedy suspending his race and endorsing Kamala Harris. How might they have changed? Oh, this is, you know, Trump is over. This is, you know, the greatest thing in the history of the world. I mean, even the independent and the moderate now sees the joy in Kamala Harris's campaign. I mean, it's just so obviously manipulated. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how the polls in this week, especially, and then coming up into September and into what is hopefully the first debate, how that will show a bump. But, you know, the polls sometimes, I think, are just an interesting snapshot, but definitely shouldn't be taken as gospel truth and something that can be absolutely relied on. I think sometimes they're geared to be self-fulfilling prophecies, and whether it's a Fox News poll that tends to favor Trump or whether it's an ABC poll that tends to favor Kamala, it's really just so that the narrative can ultimately be manipulated. It's important to pay attention to the polls, but even more important than that is worldview. And so Glenn Beck actually had a really interesting response this morning from Robert Kennedy Jr.'s post that we read in the last segment about what he considers what MAGA really means, this whole Make America Great Again. And this is a little bit lengthy, but I thought it was really interesting from Glenn Beck. He says, yes, thank you, Robert Kennedy Jr. This is exactly what we mean. The self-examination of our wrongs have made us better, more clear and empathetic, but the hatred of our country and the hatred that so many try to push is an infection in our family of man. We have all engaged in it at times, either to win an argument or out of a spirit of anger or divisiveness. We all must correct our ways, ask for forgiveness, and begin again. It is a driving wedge that we must remove to come together. The only way we can again come together is to rediscover our reason most of us came here in the first place. Like it or not, they are the revolutionary works of our founding principles. They are the same principles of your father, MLK, and Lincoln espoused. Yes, we can never meet our goals of all men are created equal and endowed with certain unalienable rights, but can you think of a grander goal? If we all could truly come together, equal and not separate. So many Americans are tired of being told to hate our country, hate our history, and hate our neighbor. We make mistakes, we learn from them, and we come together to march on in hopes of making a more perfect nation. We need each other. So he goes on, and it's a little bit longer than that. And I would encourage you to read that, because I think overall, while he kind of misses the whole point that this was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview, which he said in other contexts as well, this really is what America, whether you're Democrat or Republican, should be striving for. This is what we were unanimously founded on as a country and built our Constitution and our system of government predicated on. And that is, in my view, what is at stake in this election, is the whole system of what we are driving for as Americans. Kamala Harris wants to transform America completely into a Marxist communist utopia, where hopefully enough Americans reject that worldview. And whether or not they favor Donald Trump, that is the alternative. And won't just embrace this radical agenda that is vague, I believe, on purpose. It's vague so that she can have this kind of woke spirit of joy and, you know, yay. But joy, as people have rightly pointed out, isn't a policy. So we'll continue to talk about worldview. But I want to welcome in now our next guest of the program, Will Chamberlain. He's a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. And Will, I wanted to get your take on this headline over the weekend. The Telegram CEO, Pavel Durov, was reportedly arrested at a Paris airport. And while there hasn't been any specific articulation of exactly why, the reports at least are suggesting that it's because Telegram is a hive of criminal content, according to one source. And in addition to terrorism, most dangerous criminals use Telegram to exchange child pornography content. That's according to one source that told TF1 Info that content. What do we know about this? And, you know, some conservatives are pushing back on this narrative, saying, well, you know, this is just about a CEO of an app that allows for content that isn't censored. So this is more about lawfare than anything else.
Yeah, I suspect that it's more the latter. I have to be suspicious of you know, these rationalizations provided by the governments. It's like, I mean, it's a private encrypted messaging app. So if you design an app that people can use for private messaging and you don't necessarily know what information is on it, like, or you don't know what information is on it, then it's really bizarre to be trying to hold people liable on that theory. I think, I mean, my guess is that the real problem here is that Telegram is one of the few free speech platforms in the world. That it's a place where anybody can say what they want to say. I mean, it you know, I'm a little more skeptical of it than I would be for Elon Musk's X, because, you know, it's ultimately developed by a Russian programmer. But I'm much more skeptical of the French government's decision, you know, claims that this is a legitimate criminal investigation that's going on and not just an attempt to bully a CEO of a platform that isn't cooperating with them.
Yeah, and Telegram is based in Dubai, and as you mentioned, it was founded by Durov, who left Russia in 2014 after he refused to comply with demands to shut down opposition communities on his VK social media platform, which he sold, and that according to the Epoch Times report. But, you know, how would this at all differ from, you know, maybe a telephone company, where obviously, you know, criminals can talk on the phone and they can talk freely about their plans and nobody is going and arresting the CEO of AT&T. I mean, this doesn't really make sense in at least the way that it's being reported.
Right. Like, I mean, maybe there is some technology where actually Durov and his team can be, you know, are storing information from what your private messages and can detect them. But that's not my understanding. I mean, if it is, it does change things, right? Like, I don't think that if you're a collector of information like that and you get a subpoena, I mean, like, it's not, at that point, it's not up to you. But I think, you know, that really is the question. What is this like? Is this the telephone company, or is this like Google, where you have this massive repository of information that governments are making requests on?
Yeah, and even if you are, even if like Google it has a subpoena and then they provide the information, and, you know, having been subpoenaed myself or the, you know, the January 6th committee and other things, you know, I have gotten some of those information subpoenas from, you know, Google and some of the other, you know, places that I have had content on, just saying, you know, hey, by the way, we got this subpoena. If you want to object to it, here's the time frame, all of that stuff. And they comply. And, you know, and again, they're not being, the CEO of Google isn't out there being arrested for storing some of that information. And even in the context of criminal subpoenas, then, you know, it's not the provider, that, you know, the store of that content. It ultimately is on the user. It's just for the repository to provide that information pursuant to the subpoena. So, you know, so where does this go in? I mean, and obviously this isn't under American law. This is he was arrested by French authorities. But a lot of conservatives are really concerned that this may lead to the arrest of Elon Musk, for example, for allowing X for people to post openly and maybe some of the stored direct messages and that kind of thing, because obviously X, while it's an American company, operates abroad. Do you see any sort of concerns more worldwide that there are really some of these issues about lawfare are seeking to try to curb Elon Musk's enthusiasm to have a truly free speech platform?
Yeah, well, I mean, you remember just a couple of weeks ago when Trump did that space with Elon Musk, that Thierry Breton, a commissioner of the European Union, sent a threatening letter saying that you know, doing so potentially broke European law related to knowingly allowing the spread of mis and disinformation, which was an incredibly brazen thing for that commissioner to do. And I'm still of the belief that the United States government should just absolutely not tolerate other countries' officials threatening our free speech platforms, our technology companies, and that the correct answer there should have been formal sanctions on Breton personally for making such a bald threat. But that does show like how the European Union approaches this. And my advice to Elon Musk would be you don't go to Europe. You need to stay in the United States, where our government and our laws protect you. I mean, our government's getting worse and worse by the day, and I worry under a Harris administration what that will look like. But we still do have a robust rule of law in this country and a judicial system that generally respects the First Amendment. So I think this is really the only safe place for any of these CEOs to be. And certainly they shouldn't be making any travel in the European Union. It has to be treated like a hostile free speech zone, something like Soviet Russia would have been in the 80s.
Wow, isn't that just tragic and the state of global affairs? But I'm speaking with Will Chamberlain, who's senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. And you know, you mentioned the Harris administration and the potential Harris administration. And of course, we've had the Biden-Harris administration as much as, you know, she's running on, here's all the things that I can do. And yet she, you know, conveniently forgets that she's been in the White House for the last 3.5 years. But I think that her policies, like I mentioned earlier on in the segment, Will, have been vague on purpose. And that's because she's trying to just say, oh, we're for joy and freedom, and wanting to mislead people to think that that means what we as Americans know it means, rather than the sort of brazen, you know, communist Marxist agenda that she truly has. What, if anything, do we know about what the First Amendment and free speech and, you know, lack of government censorship, I mean, all of those things that we all hold very near and dear, what that might look like under a Kamala Harris administration, and contrasting that between a Trump administration, because it does boil down to worldview and the policy.
Well, I mean, I think you should expect a Harris administration to engage in unrestricted lawfare against the people like Elon Musk who have, you know, who essentially have declared themselves in opposition to Harris. Under Biden, the Democrat administration, you know, used the criminal justice system and weaponized it against its ideological enemies. I expect that will continue even more forcefully under a Harris administration. And so, you know, they're going to try, and I don't think they're going to be able to do anything vis-a-vis, you know, just stopping him from speaking or getting his platform, because they know the courts will shut that down. But, you know, Elon has a ton of other business interests. Many of them do business with the federal government. I expect basically the Harris administration to try and find every lever, every bit of leverage it has over Elon Musk and exercise it to try and get him to behave. And then the question is how Elon will respond to that. I think he's a pretty brave guy and will stand up to it. But, you know, he won't end up in jail for X. He'll end up in, you know, but he might end up in jail over something else because they just find a way to prosecute him for something ridiculous.
Well, yeah, we can look at the New York case against President Trump as an example of that. You know, if we can't get him on, you know, whatever we want, we'll just go after him for, you know, something else that's basically totally fabricated and shoehorned in. And, you know, we'll try to have that sentencing before the November election. And so, you know, lawfare is really important. And, you know, with your position on the Article 3 project, the judiciary matters because, like you mentioned, Will Chamberlain, you know, the courts are currently, at least, are not going to put up with, you know, a lot of the super crazy lawfare. But at the same time, we've seen some of these Democrat appointed judges that do favor politics, at least it seems so in their rulings, rather than the rule of law. And I think that that is a huge voting issue as well, in the contrast between what Kamala Harris's judicial appointments would be versus what we saw in the first 4 years of the Trump administration and the judicial appointments. How important is that as a voting issue?
Oh, it's a hugely important voting issue. You know, Kamala Harris hasn't personally put out a list, but she hired as her director of communications a guy named Brian Fallon, who's previously the head of an organization called Demand Justice. And that was a left-leaning Supreme Court advocacy organization, far left. And they have a Supreme Court shortlist. And you could look at who do these people think should be on the Supreme Court? And it's a list of horrible, horrible names. I'll give you the worst one right off the top. Lawrence Krasner, the DA in Philadelphia, the guy who's turned Philadelphia into a drug-infested war zone. They think he should be a Supreme Court justice. And I want to communicate just how damaging that would be to the country, right? Lawrence Krasner is the guy who thinks we shouldn't have, I mean, basically that prosecutors' offices are prosecuting too many criminals, that there are way too many people in jail, and that, you know, he's a classic Soros reform prosecutor. If he had the ability to control what federal constitutional law said about criminal prosecutions, it would make criminal prosecution difficult in every jurisdiction in this country. So you'd get Lawrence Krasner style policy in your little, you know, in your town. It's really, really important to understand that the consequences of Democrats winning again, given how far left they have gone, are dramatic and long reaching for you and your family.
Really well said. And Will Chamberlain, we appreciate the work that you do at the Article 3 Project along with our good friend Mike Davis. You can follow them on X at Article 3 Project. You can follow Will at Will Chamberlain on X. And you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Make it a great day. We'll be back with more tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.